Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. Welcome to this week's show. Bill Gretchen, welcome. Can you believe it is already May?
Yeah.
You
know, cross-reference things. We obviously do a weekly episode, and the episode numbers are the week of the year, and it's week 20, and I'm just like, I can remember when it was New Year's, and it didn't feel like 20 weeks ago, you know?
But, yeah.
I guess it has been, and it's just time marches on, so getting into the spring, which has been nice. Summer's coming up, which can be nice, or it can be forest fires, so we'll see how this year goes.
Yeah,
I don't want forest fire season.
Yeah, or floods, or tornadoes, or the other things that seem to be going on all over the place
volcanoes,
lately.
Volcanoes, tsunamis.
Yeah. no volcanoes, no tsunamis. Anyway, on that cheery note, let's go ahead and jump into the news. Hopefully we've got some positive news.
Well, a record-breaking tunnel is being built from Denmark to Germany.
All right, so what do you get for £6.5 billion, or about $8 billion? And evidently the answer to that is a tunnel from, as you say, Denmark to Germany. So in Europe, for anybody that doesn't know, a tunnel a number of years ago was built between the UK and France called the Channel. And this was a very much a record-breaking thing, and it shaved a lot of time off of travel. You didn't have to go on ferries and these type of things. And that is what they are doing with the tunnel that's going to be between Germany and Denmark, which has a name that I am not going to attempt to pronounce right now. It has an awful lot of letters in it, but it's doing the same type of thing. It's going to shave from 5 hours to 2.5 hours, the rail link,
Wow.
And the same thing with driving your car. You no longer have to get on a ferry voyage. And this one is the big time savings. The ferry voyage is about 45 minutes. In the tunnel, it's about 10 minutes.
Wow.
That is pretty impressive.
Yeah. And it's, so this is kind of a really, you know, an interesting thing. And the fact that the technology is around to be able to do this is amazing. The other part of this that I thought was interesting is the way it's being built. They're making these encasements, dropping them to the bottom, and then assembling them like Legos.
Oh.
Under the water.
That makes sense. It's Denmark.
Yes, yes, this is true. This is true. I didn't even think about that, but you're absolutely right. You know, maybe Lego's sponsoring it. Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah.
In other news, Emma Watson hasn't made a movie in 6 years and made a life-changing decision.
Well, this is an interesting story. Emma Watson, very well-known actress, and played in Harry Potter.
She played Hermione. And,
yeah. Yeah, you know, not a behind-the-scenes character at all, right? And, in my opinion, did a very nice job of it. But she's kind of made a turn in recent years. And she had gone and studied acting, there we go, we're not in Viking mode today, at Oxford. And she's going back to Oxford to do something else, and that's to get her a doctorate of psychology, or philosophy. Is it philosophy or psychology she's doing?
I don't remember. And I just thought it was fascinating.
Anyway, she's doing a doctorate. It is philosophy, by the way. She's doing a doctorate. And previously, she had done a master's degree in creative writing. So, you know, Oxford is a really amazing school. But it is interesting to see how these things play out. And in something like this, it just goes to show that you can definitely have multiple disciplines and be good at them.
Mm-hmm.
NASA internship programs are happening now.
Something that's offered through NASA's Office of STEM Engagement, or OSTEM for Gretchen. They're got to have the acronym in there, right? So these are internships that are offered, and the deadline for 2025 for this fall is coming right up on May 16th. So basically what you want to do is go to NASA's website, search for OSTEM, O-S-T-E-M, and you can find the page for that. And the information will be there. May 7th, which is really coming right up, is the registration deadline for the virtual event that goes through all of this stuff. So something that is definitely good to do. These have been out for a while. If you do miss this one, there are application deadlines for 2026 as well. coming up this fall, but it's still something that you could get into this year if you wanted to do it. And there's just a number of things that are offered, a number of different disciplines and that type of thing, and really something that can get you going in STEM, and for NASA, or even stuff you would learn there would work outside of that too. So again, something definitely to consider if it's a direction that you want to go to in life. Just go to nasa.gov and search for OSTEM.
Also in space, Andor Season 2's catchy wedding song raises some serious questions.
Yeah, but this was a long, long time ago and somewhere far, far away, I think, wasn't it?
Uh-huh. In a different galaxy.
Yes, in a different galaxy. All right, Gretchen, go ahead. You're our resident Star Wars expert.
Oh, well, you know, I guess it depends on if you've actually watched the new season. And the music is amazing. And I don't want to ruin it for everybody. Maybe we can talk about this in more depth in a little bit after we finish the
news. Yeah, I think there's a lot to go over here. And actually, you're absolutely right. This is a season that's actually gotten a lot of very positive reviews and things. So yeah, let's circle that and we'll dive a little bit more in after the news.
All right. So professors staffed a fake company entirely with AI agents. So tell us what happened.
Okay, well, this didn't end well, but so with AI and all of the stuff that's going on related to that, there has been a lot of concerns about AI coming in and taking all of our jobs. So this was a little bit of an experiment that was done. And let's just say that AI working completely on its own in this respect is not going to come and take our job immediately or anytime soon. So basically what they were doing is they were pitting different AIs against not each other really, but the idea of workers using these different models to see how well they would do. And they used Google, OpenAI, Meta, and some others. And it ended up being kind of an interesting thing to see. The success rates on these, which was what they were measuring, was the highest one ended up with just 24% of being able to finish the jobs assigned to it. And it went kind of down from there. So I don't know. I think that at the end of the day, number one, looking at an experiment like this, definitely it would be interesting to see how this was done specifically. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of information on the details of what was done, but it would seem to allude that they were using robots or something like that, but it doesn't talk about that. So I'm trying to dig in to get a little bit more information here, because I think that if it is handled one way, you'd get an entirely different, you know, outcome of it than if you were handling it another. So I think the only real way that we're all going to be able to work together, humans and AI, is that we all become cyborgs and just get AI built into our systems. What do you think of that?
It's different.
Yeah.
It's
so is life with technology.
Just thinking about this topic, perhaps the AIs didn't have a motive. Maybe they needed a motive. And being a human squishy life form, we have needs. So yeah, we have a motive for working. You know what I mean?
The other part of it is they might have just looked at this and said, this is stupid. Let's have fun for the day. There's always that.
Yeah,
I suppose so.
You never know.
In darker news, hackers released millions of files after Oregon DEQ cyber attack.
Yeah, so this has been an interesting thing. Our home station is here in Oregon, and so something that's been on the news here, but definitely the idea of this is valid pretty much anywhere, because these type of things are happening all over the place. Basically, what happened is the Oregon DEQ, DEQ stands for Department of Environmental Quality, and they do things like smog certificates and car registrations and a variety of other things beyond that, but that's what we would see them most front end for. Their system got hacked, and it was taken down for a while. They closed all of the DEQ stations. You couldn't renew online, things like that. They also have a system here in Oregon where businesses can also do smog checks, like a service station, that kind of thing. Those weren't working anymore. And initially when this came out, the workers didn't have access to laptops. They were trying to work through their phones and that type of a thing. And the hackers wanted to ransom the information back to them for 30 Bitcoin, I believe is what it was. It was the value they put on it. And, you know, that's an impressive amount of money. It's about $2.5 million at the exchange rate right now. Now, with Bitcoin, that could be much higher, much lower when you hear this, but that's what it is today. And any way you look at it, that is a lot of money. So they wouldn't work with the hackers, and the hackers released the data on the dark web, and about 1.3 million files, 2.4 terabytes of data. And one of the things that I do have to say about this is just after the past 10 years or so with all of the hacking, really, most of us, our private information's already out on the dark web one way or the other. So it seems like, is there really a value on this stuff? In some cases, there might be. I don't know if it's so much important who got a smog certificate or not, you know, that kind of a thing, to be paying $2.5 million of taxpayer money. Now, I would also be willing to venture that the cost of repairing this is probably somewhere in the same ballpark, you know? But one of the things on this is they really advise us, cybersecurity professionals being the they in that sentence, not to pay the ransoms, because it just promotes this type of thing from happening over and over again. You know, what you really do need to do is make sure that your systems are backed up and backed up offline, because online backups, while they're a lot simpler than the way we used to do it with, you know, tapes and other things like that, are online. So if your system fails, you can restore from it very quickly. But if a hacker gets in, they're going to know that you have backups that are online, and they're going to encrypt the backups as well as your primary systems. So having an investment that would also include offline backup is pretty important. And it's a lot less money to do that now. I know back when I used to work on site doing hardware and that type of a thing, backup systems were extremely expensive for bigger operations. And you had tapes and other things like that, that you would swap in and swap out and all of this stuff. But today you can simply just get a few large hard drives, 10 terabyte drive you can get for about, oh, I don't know, $150 for a good one, maybe even less now. You get those, use those to rotate out. And then that way you always have data that's sitting in a place that's physically not connected to your network. And that would give you the offline backup and do it in a way that it is, that you would have access to it, you know, in case some of this thing type would happen. And we keep hearing these stories. Hackers claim this week to have stolen 1.3 terabytes of Ticketmaster user data. This one including names, addresses, and credit card information. So, you know, and again, what they'll do is they'll steal the data and then encrypt your systems so that you can't do anything until you pay them their money. The problem is we have no idea what the quality of these encryption programs are. And you also have no way of knowing that if you pay them the ransom, that they're actually going to unencrypt it.
Yeah.
So that isn't always a end-all, be-all of these type of things. So anyway, as far as the data from DEQ, it is out there. You can get it online. Oregon Public Broadcasting was able to confirm that. And that is what happened here. The systems are being restored. You can once again get smog certificates. I believe as we're recording, the offsite ones where you get it like another business, that's not working yet. And there are some other parts of the system that are down. Interestingly enough, they just launched a new online system dealing with this kind of stuff, and that wasn't touched. So I don't know, maybe better security or whatever.
Yeah. The Chromecast with Google TV is reborn with a new name.
So this is only exciting if you know what this is.
Yeah. And so I don't know what it is. So.
You know, when Chromecast first came out, this is a product by Google. It works similar to something like a Fire TV stick or one of those.
Oh.
But basically what its original idea was is that you would plug a dongle into a television HDMI, and then you could stream to it from a laptop or a tablet or whatever. And that's what it was for. And as time went by, I have actually one of the very first ones still, because I got it at the time to test it out for something. It still works. And over time, they've been upgrading this to include Google TV and different things like that, making it a lot more like a Roku or a Fire TV stick. They discontinued it and replaced it with a new version that is formatted a lot more like a set-top box. It also cost a lot more money. So it almost seems like they went back to a little bit of an older design. So a company called Thomson has launched a device called the Cast 150, which works a lot like the Google TV dongle that was discontinued, but with the more modern features that are on the box, including things like a live TV button in the middle, which is your free TV, I think, and different things like that. device has 2 gigabytes of RAM, 8 gigabytes of storage, and has support for Dolby Atmos and Dolby Vision. So definitely high-end technology available from this thing. They haven't released the price of it yet, but it should be something similar to what the original Chromecast was. It also looks like it's going to be coming out in Europe first, which is where this company is. So in the United States, I think we'll probably get it a little bit later. And there certainly will be increased costs due to shipping and tariffs and all of that, but it will eventually be available. But it is nice to see that this type of a product isn't going away, especially when there's definitely a use for these things. And getting a set-top box in certain situations makes sense, but not always. So, all right, Gretchen, you had mentioned that we might circle back and talk a little bit more about Andor. So since we're going to be talking about this, let's just do the spoiler alert. If you have not watched the season yet, has the whole season dropped now?
No. Okay. I've seen 6 episodes.
Well, if you haven't watched the part of the season that has dropped, there's a safe answer. Go ahead and close your ears because we might be getting into some stuff you don't want to hear yet. For everybody else, let's go ahead and talk about this. So, Gretchen, you had started to say during the news something about a wedding song. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Well, actually, let's dial it back and just look at some of the generalities concerning this new Andor. Wow, the costuming. The guy who did the costuming did an amazing job. You have the beautiful, like the remember the costumes from Naboo and all of that?
Right.
And then all of the gritty stuff, you know, from Rogue One. Well, all of this is part of it. You have the gritty costume, the gritty feeling, and then you have the beautiful, luxurious stuff. So there's something for everyone visually pleasing. So there's beautiful makeup, there's beautiful costumes, and then the actors have done a really good job. So we have superb acting and really good storytelling. This is probably the biggest flaw that I have seen in certain Star Wars endeavors in the last couple of years. A poor storytelling. Well, Andor is still telling amazing stories with fascinating characters, exciting plot lines, intriguing situations. It's good. It's really good. You have to watch this. I found myself just kind of jaw dropping at what was happening by the time they got to the wedding scene. You have this comparison and contrast of these different events happening. You'll have an event that is gritty and scary, and they're contrasting it with this beautiful wedding. And then the wedding has a dark side that you don't know about, and the guests don't know about it, but Mon Mothma does. And you're watching her desperately trying to put out of her mind what must be done. And she starts taking drinks of alcohol, and she's trying to throw herself into the dancing scene where people are celebrating this beautiful wedding. And you know that she's not really dancing for joy. She's dancing because she's trying to forget something really horrible is about to happen. So, there's a lot of really cool intrigue. You're going to be really excited about I can't think of his name, Cyril and the ISB agent lady. There's some interesting developments between those two. You're going to get to see one of your favorite bad guys from Rogue One. He will be irritating you again. He's just as annoying. And then, of course, you have the semi-bad guy, Saw Gerrera. You know, he's not really a bad guy, but he's not really a good guy. And he's there too, you know, Forrest Whitaker, doing his job to make everybody feel a bit uncomfortable about a guy who's trying to be a hero, but he's not quite right there. What do you guys think? Do you want to see this or not?
Well, first of all, I'm sorry to hear you didn't like it. I hate to admit it. I have not seen it yet. I was going to sit down and do it, and my subscription to Disney Plus had commercials, and I just couldn't. I just
I get
it,
that
screwed it up.
Yeah. That's the reason why Jeremy and I originally bought the Rebels season on the DVDs, because the commercials on the Disney Channel are so horrible. They're so unappealing and shocking and irritating. We thought, hey, let's just buy the CD or the DVD and enjoy it. And it made it so much better. So
yeah, it's all the way around. And obviously you can subscribe to Disney where it's commercial free, which you have, which means I'll probably come over to your house and watch it at some point.
Yes. You're most welcome. So any of you, do either of you have any thoughts or ideas what you think may have happened since the last first season was shown? Or have you even thought about it?
I don't know. I mean, I've seen the trailers and stuff like that to see what's going on here. And I knew going into it, if they kept up with what the way they did it in the first season, it was going to be pretty good. And the feedback that I've been seeing on it is that it's at least that, if not even better. So, you know, as far as a guess, it's hard to say because the original one went so many different directions and it was hard to know what was around each corner, which I liked.
Yes.
It was nice to not just automatically know, oh, this is pro forma and, you know, we started here and we're going to end there kind of thing.
Oh, there's something
not
else.
Not know where it's going to go.
There's something else that a lot of people complain about. I don't know if you've complained about it, but sometimes Jeremy would. You know how you'll have a character who will get onto an alien ship and just magically know how to use it? That happens sometimes in Star Trek. And it would be really irritating. It's like, how do they just magically know how to use this? Well, Cassian gets sent on a mission and he's supposed to fly a ship and he gets in there and it's like, this isn't the ship that I was trained to take. And I love it. Everybody who likes that bit of realism, you're going to like that. It's really quite fun. Cool.
My goodness. I I'm going to have to sit down and watch this. I know it's, I finally got through Skeleton Crew and, you know, it's so that.
Did you like it?
I liked it. Yeah. And
yeah, it was fun.
It was worth seeing. But again, it's kind of a situation where this series is very different in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And, but was very enjoyable. I know it was just one of those ones where, oh, it's over, you know, kind of thing it for the episode and ready to binge watch the next one. So, no, that's pretty cool. Yeah, no, it seems like they're having some hits now with what they're doing on some of these series. And there's rumors now of the Mandalorian movie and some of the other things coming up. And it's going to be interesting to see where all of that goes, especially with Kathleen Kennedy leaving Disney at the end of the year. And it still looks like that is the plan. There could be some real differences if there's somebody else at the helm of the ship, you know?
Yeah.
And that could be very interesting to see where that goes. I know Dave Filoni and some of the others that have worked on like Mandalorian and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like they are the ones that tend to have a little bit better end result. I don't know if you would disagree with me on that.
No, I agree with you. I think they actually love the Star Wars universe and I think that makes a difference. Yeah.
So, and that's definitely the case. All right, got a great interview coming up for you in the next segment, so stay tuned. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Check out our website, userfriendly.show. It is the one-stop place for you to submit your questions, find our back episodes and everything else. And we are in the process right now of revamping the website a little bit and making it simpler and easier to find things. Also, our blog is back up. And Gretchen, I know you've been contributing to that a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm working on it.
So be nice to get that back up and running. We've had the blog, but weren't really doing anything with it for a while. What it is back. They were doing it where our articles were also being carried by some of the radio stations we were on. And we stopped doing that about a year ago, but the software was still tied to it. So it was causing some problems. And, you know, sometimes things just don't always get fixed quickly.
Yep.
So, but we got the rewrite of that done now, and we are getting back to the blog. So anyway, check it out, userfriendly.show. That is your place to go. Well, today we've got a great interview coming up with our guest, Chris Carter. And among other things, he works with VMware and SAP and some of these different type of things. And Gretchen, can you tell us what all those acronyms mean, please?
I have no idea. I could make stuff up.
Now, Bill, you might actually know a little bit more about this stuff, I think. But
well, I know the virtual machineware. SAP's a little bit obscure to me.
SAP comes from a tree.
Yeah, there you go. No, but virtual, I wanted to talk just a little bit before we get into the interview about what these things are. And virtualization is something that is still used. It was really used when we had stuff in data centers. So right now, most websites and stuff are hosted on the cloud with places like Amazon Web Services or Microsoft Azure or Rackspace or those kind of companies. But there was a time, and we had it with our company too, that we had physical servers in a data center. And servers are expensive, so you would use virtualization that would allow you to do things like running different operating systems or multiple environments or things like that on one physical piece of hardware. Modern computers, we use that now. If you're running, say, Windows 11, but you need to run Linux, sometimes you could do that as a virtual machine. Most later machines have that built in, and I think it's Windows 11 Professional that allows you to do it. VMware is one such software, and it is something that is used in bigger data center applications. And back in 2016, I got to do a little bit of programming for them. It was kind of fun. We were doing this quiz thing that their company used. I was out there for a little while. So it was interesting to kind of meet and get an idea of what the internals of that company looked like, which was very positive at the time. They were very forward-looking and easy to work with. So, and I'm not just saying that because our interview happens to talk about VMware. It was actually a good contract. Anyway, that being said, let's go ahead and dive into this with somebody that actually does know what they're talking about in the modern implementation of these things. Chris Carter, here we go. Joining us now, guest Christopher Carter, who I am going to introduce you as a technologist. Tell us a little bit about why you have that title and what you do.
Hey, William, thank you. And please call me Chris. My friends all do. I love technology. I started my career as a technologist student at Georgia Tech. I started in the computer science classes and just loved working on computers. My first two computers were a Commodore VIC-20 and an Apple IIe. I thought I was cool back in 1985 or 87.
Oh, yeah.
I went to college. I was cool back then.
Yeah.
And that VIC-20, when I was recording, remember we had the old tape recorder? We could take a tape stick, put it in there. Well, I was making birds go across the screen. And from that point on, my career path was chosen for me by God. I just got into technology, computers, hardware. I did an internship with a company that held old punch cards. Remember those back in the day? I had to work on those for my internship. And then I got blessed by an individual at SAP America that was working with a company down there, Coca-Cola. A small little company. You may or may not have heard of
them. I think they're going to go far if you want my advice on that. I think they're probably have some potential.
They're doing pretty well. They're doing pretty well down there in the Georgia area. And that company decided they were going to go to R3 from the old mainframe R2s. And they picked me out of the blue and said, hey, we would really like you to come work for us. You're already doing work here. We'd love to see what you can do. And I went to the academy. And funny, I went off to the academy and four other individuals in that academy all went on to become successful CEOs in different SAP-based organizations or vice presidents of sales. So it was a fun class. And from that point on, I started playing with x86s. I started playing with IBM. I started playing with virtualization. I became the first individual to virtualize an SAP environment to the point where I got my hand slapped by SAP in their Palo Alto, California office. That's always a great story to talk about when I'm in the SAP offices in Waldorf, Germany. And then cloud came in and virtualization and now AI. And I literally continuously educate myself. I'm at an event over my shoulder, that conference center there, where I'm talking about SAP cloud and AI with some major partners around the United States. And I just love tech and I love helping people with tech and I love educating. Heck, I've written 7 books on tech, 4 of them bestsellers, and I've got to be doing something right, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you, it's always amazing to me how many of us started. My first computer was an Atari 130 XE. So the old 6502 days, you know, how that drove like 20 years, right? So and now you mentioned that, and it's like you had 16K of RAM to program in. How did you manage that? That's why we have no hair, for one thing, you know. So I'm going to start with, I think, the juiciest part of this. Tell us about when you got your hand slapped in Germany.
Oh, so I was doing the SAP Virtualization Week in Palo Alto, California. Well, I had already virtualized the system, and I was already giving them to clients to test as test environments and sandboxes to play with on Dell Rack and Stacks. And so I would give them access. I would let them in. So I go to this event, and I have it on a drive. I literally had brought a drive with me, had my laptop, plugged it in. I said, "Welcome to the world of virtualization of SAP." The room went silent. That wasn't announced yet and hadn't been announced that VMware and SAP were in talks, because VMware wanted this licensing fee, of course, to use the systems. SAP was still working on things. I finished my presentation. I go back to my seat, and all of a sudden this hand comes on my shoulder and says, "Hey, Chris, come upstairs with us." I'm like, "Oh, this is cool. They want to see more." All of a sudden, inside that room is the president of North America, and we're sitting down going, "You need to sign this immediately. You cannot talk about it. You cannot show anybody this, and you sure cannot sell this right now. We are still in negotiations with VMware. It's not approved."
Oh,
and I just, everything fell out of my body. I'm like, "Oh my God, this is my business. This is where I'm going. This is what my pro." So we sat there for another 2 hours, and they started asking me both technical, financial, and business strategy questions. I ended up leaving that room negotiating a SAP partnership and the fact that I had already had customers, non-paying customers back then. And we literally sat down and said, "Okay, when you announce this in another 2 weeks, can I at least announce that I have the first or one of the first paid customers on here?" They said, "No, you can't do that, but you can announce that you have a customer." I said, "Okay, great." And I waited. Well, that 2 weeks ended up becoming 4 weeks because VMware was asking for more monies because they had realized how many customers SAP had and how many systems are in a landscape. They thought this would be a one perpetual license, and it ended up not being that way. It ended up being that every dev, every QA, every sandbox, every test environment, every plus, every one of the boxes would end up having a virtualized license to it. So they saw from 1 to 5 to 10 to whatever that landscape was. And so I ended up waiting, and I'm just sweating this out. I end up going to Waldorf after it's all signed, and I end up going into a meeting with some other executives showing them. And I ended up getting pulled into another meeting and said, "So you're the guy that got us in trouble." "How did I get SAP in trouble?" I said, "Because of you, we had to negotiate with VMware faster, and we had to get it done because they knew it could be done because their executives were in the room that I presented at."
And nobody, oh, nice.
Nobody told me that they were in those offices watching, taking notes, basically taking screenshots with their flip phones of everything I had up on the screen.
That's, I love that story. That's just crazy. You know, it's, and stuff like that happens because if you don't know, nobody's like briefed you, right? So
yeah.
Nobody told us we couldn't play. That's R&D to me. That was all. It took me a full year of research and development of how I could manipulate the ECC or the R3 environment. Get it on the virtualized environment. How much of a virtualized? Because I'm going to put it on a big rack and stack inside my facility. Now I need to figure out how much do I need to put in regards to the C drive, the D drive, the Z drive. Where am I going to get the information? How am I going to store? All that was going through our heads as we were building that. And so the next time I ended up doing something, I kind of asked for permission. But I was also looking for forgiveness because when they came out with the from R3 and they went to ECC, I already started to build that. And so I already went to Waldorf and said, "Hey, you guys are going to have ECC on VMware, correct? Well, yeah, of course. We're already starting to do this. I said, you know, my partnership, can I make sure that we look with together and we work together on this? I said, why? And I said, well, I've already built it. What do you mean you've already built it? Easy. I took what I had and I used it, and it was all my methodologies, and I built it. You want to see it? You guys can deploy it. You guys can even have it. So I showed them everything in literally a week-long structured over at Waldorf, and had a great time with everybody. Oh, German beer is pretty darn good. Remember that, folks. Great food.
I have to agree with that.
Yeah.
I loved it. And we had a great time, and I literally showed them the entire process of how we encapsulated that ECC environment. And by the time Sapphire was there, we moved forward, and lo and behold, we became one of the first SAP startup focus program partners. So that means we could partner with anything that SAP had from a technology standpoint. I could build anything. I was allowed to do my own R&D. I had my staff in Brazil, India, United States, and in the UK and Germany. And we literally were just hammering away. Build, 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 have fun, have fun. We drank a lot of beer. We did a lot of technology. We ate a lot of candy that we shouldn't have. And I'm now dealing with that as a 55-year-old man. But it was so much fun. And that's what I think technology is losing these days. We're not having fun. Oh, we're trying to build bots and do this with AI. But let's go back to the R&D. Let's have some fun with this. And that's what I was doing back then.
You know, and it's interesting you bring that up because, you know, we were talking earlier about some of where all of this started, and it seems like we've seen a change. Back in the early days, you actually got a manual that showed you how to take the computer apart.
Today, yeah.
You get a manual that says if you do that, you will be, you know.
Yelled at.
Yeah. So, I agree. It has. Now, we have some things like Raspberry Pi and other stuff that hobbyists can get into and, you know, build their own thing, but it's not the same as it used to be. And I agree with you. The fun of it is, at least for people like us, is a big part of that is doing the engineering and seeing what you can do, you know?
Oh, yeah. I love getting my hands dirty. Now, I don't get my hands dirty as much. My executive team has got me out speaking at events and talking. And I love that because I get to talk to the younger generation, and they call me a gray beard, and I wonder why. But I get to have these conversations about, you know, this is what we did back then. Why don't you take a little step? Go to GitHub. Go have some fun out there. Go put your project out there. Have people review it. Talk about it with other people. You know, I love being, like we were talking earlier, you guys are, your main shows are in Portland and Seattle. Two great technology hubs. Talk about the technology that has come out of those two markets. I've got clients in both. I go up there and I have fun. Hell, I could sit at Microsoft all day long, playing in an Azure environment with SAP, with some AI, with Copilot and other activities, and get them all funneled together. And then I can go up to Portland and I can visit with one of my customers. I say, hey, this is what I was just doing over here. You guys got some interest? And there's a CIO over there that just loves playing with new toys. So you get out there and you play with some new toys. You go downtown, you have some great beverages and some great meals, and you just keep conversation flowing. And that's what I said. I try to get these kids to have that conversation, keep them flowing again.
Yeah. And it's so important because next generation, yeah. You know, and these type of things, I love to hear you talking about that because it is, people get involved and they have this idea now that, you know, if I do tech, it's A, B, and C, and it's not. I mean, you know, it's there's a wide variety of things. Now, I know you've been involved and have founded a number of different things, including a pub. So tell us a little bit about your businesses outside of SAP.
Yeah. So we've got the AppRoyal, I will call it my main day job. Then I created, as part of AppRoyal, we created a tool called Overwatch that is part of Mugatu AI. And if anybody can figure out Mugatu, who is Mugatu, that would be great. That is a tool that we call Overwatch that manages, runs, and supports an entire landscape, no matter if it's a legacy landscape of old Siebel or JD Edwards, or Oracle, SAP, whatever the case may be, IFS. It manages, runs, and supports that landscape, so you don't have to have as many people managing and running that landscape for you on a day-to-day basis. But it also deals with security, it deals with patching, migrations, upgrades. And it brings that all together with an AI-based platform to allow you to not have as many individuals working on it. It lets me put people into projects for R&D and other activities. Then I also created a tool or a company called Charging Bunny, which is an EV-based charging company based upon solar that is solarized, storage-wise. And we actually want to ingest as much solar as possible. Wisconsin, there's not as many EVs that are California, Nevada, others. We can sell it back to the grid, and we sell it back for actually the same amount that we would sell it to for an EV charging port. So we're actually coming out ahead with both the EVs as well as with giving it back to the different entities in the Wisconsin markets that attach to us to from the grid. We never pull from the grid. We are a clean base energy profile. We don't want to pull anything ever from the grid. It is a one-way, one direction. It either comes in and goes into a vehicle or it goes to the grid, and we provide it then to the grid for that. And then finally, this past year, my wife and I made a career life decision. We moved up to a northern lake in Wisconsin. We've had this house now for 8 years, and we decided we were going to live there full time. But what the city and the area need, it's a little bit more of a blighted community, unfortunately. About 70% of the children, actually 90% of the children, are on some type of substance where they need assistance in the schools. They need food. They need the government to take care of them. And then, unfortunately, 73% of all adults in that area are on some type of drug, be it marijuana, be it methamphetamines, those types of things. It's really bad up in that area. Our county is the number one drug county in the state of Wisconsin. It's terrible. But then you have this entity, which is a lot of higher end homes where people come up there for the summers and they live and they have, but there was nothing for the locals and those individuals to have. So we bought an old abandoned restaurant. We fixed it up. Now we serve food at a very comparable cost. We still have to deal with some of the egg prices and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you sell eggs, you're a gourmet restaurant now, so it's just the way it is.
We don't serve breakfast on Sundays, thank God. But we wanted to be able to give back to the community. We wanted to give back to the individuals that were there. We also wanted to cater to everybody. We're a very inclusive organization. So my wife, Scott, runs that on a day-to-day basis. I go in there and I try not to be her best customer in drinking whiskey and beer, but I do like the food because we have a fantastic cook who just, he's out there smoking tri-tips this morning, I was told. And aww. I'm like, oh, wait a second, I'm not old. Do this to me. And my wife lets me pick out all the whiskeys. We got over 100 bottles of whiskey now and bourbons that I get to personally pick out. And then I will actually do some social media for her. I will do the book, talk about the bottle, I'll talk about the flavors, talk about the styles. And then we discuss that on a weekly basis. Fun stuff.
Okay, wow. Now I'm wanting tri-tip today. So
yeah.
This is cool. So yummy.
So now you mentioned you have 4 books that you've published. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Thank you. I've been very blessed. I'm a 4-time best-selling author on Amazon. My books are the Mastering SAP series. It's Mastering SAP, which is the generic version or generic book that talks about, and it's the orange one. So if anybody's looking, it's the orange one. It talks about the SAP landscape going to the new S4. And then I've got the blue one, which is SAP and Mastering Cloud. Then it's SAP. The green book is Mastering SAP for AI. And then the red book is the Mastering SAP with Security and Security Profiles for SAP. And all of them tie together in the Mastering SAP series. My latest one just went out. It is Mastering SAP for the upgrade of or upgrade to S4. Got to remember my titles here. all said and told, I've got, 6 Mastering SAP series books out. I have a number of other books that I have out there, but those are just for fun and validity. But the four bestsellers were a complete surprise when we started launching those. It was just having so much fun giving back. And I only charged 99 cents for them on Kindle, enough that, you know, I can say that I'm a published author with profits and go from there. And there are 100 and some pages, maybe 120, 130. And I do go into some detail on some graphics and some activities, but it's really for the 480,000 customers of SAP who need to upgrade and need to migrate to the new cloud-based solution. And so I have a great time writing them. I have a great time talking with them. I sign books all the time and I ship them out in the mail. Go to conferences like this. There's a pile of books in an area that I get to talk with folks on. And I just love giving back, as I talked about earlier. It's learn something new every day and you're going to really have an enjoyable life.
You know, I bet we're going to get a lot of questions and things from our listeners. So, Bill, right. What do you think? Do you think we're going to need to have him come back?
Yeah, we'll throw out that invitation right now because that's going to be clear. And I think what we'll do here is we'll get the links to your various websites posted. I know you sent us that so that our listeners can find that in our socials and check it out. And, you know, I just think it's absolutely amazing. I really enjoy talking to you because there's so much of these different things and it just kind of gives an idea of what you really can do. And I think it is really important to consider how much opportunity there is out there really, that's not just sitting at a desk. And is there anything else you'd like to tell us?
My daughters, I love you.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us?
You know, I love to talk to people, so please reach out to me. Find me on my websites or reach me on LinkedIn or one of my social channels. I respond to everybody. I will not necessarily pick up the call right away because I am traveling a lot. My second home is called Delta. But
yeah.
I love to have conversations with individuals and talk about it. So feel free anytime to reach out to me on any of my different socials or whatever I have.
Well, Chris, thank you so much.
Well, thanks, guys. It's been great. I'll see you soon.
And now for something completely different. Gretchen, how's CyberHawk going?
Ah, it's coming along. I'm looking forward to the professional editors to hand the materials over to me so I can freak out.
Yeah, well, as that happens as we're recording today, that is actually today. Get it back from my understanding. So
okay. Well, then I'll be freaking out. It's like, oh no, I messed up this and I messed up that and oh dear, you know, I'm sure it's going to be that way.
So yeah, well, you know, but I think actually you write well. So probably I'm sure that the editors have seen some crazy stuff come through, you know?
Yeah.
But it's interesting too, because it's like you're editing two books simultaneously, Rise of Heroes for CyberHawk, and then also a one-off called Night School Journal, which is a book you've had in working for, I don't know, 10, 15 years now. So it's great that you're actually getting that finished and into the CyberHawk universe. So it's going to be kind of fun. I read the book when you first wrote it, but it didn't have an ending yet. And I really enjoyed it. So,
well, hopefully you'll still like the ending.
Yeah, I have a funny feeling I will. And we're going to need to talk about this editing process when we have some time, because I know it's partially AI driven too. So once you've actually gone through it, you're going to have to give us your thoughts on that.
Okay, I will.
Well, that would be great. Until next week, this is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0, copyright 2013 to 2025 by User Friendly Media Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. Content is the opinion of the show's participants and not necessarily this station or platform. Requests for material use, interviews, CCPA, Privacy Notice for California residents, GDPR information for UK and EU residents, and any other feedback may be submitted at userfriendly.show. We welcome your input. Thank you for listening.